When I was little and I thought about what the proper way to be a Christian was or the proper way to follow Jesus was, I always thought of my great-grandmother, Myrna. She was a farm wife growing up in South Dakota. She was one of the first generation in her one schoolhouse to be of girls who got to play sports. And she, in what I remember of her and in what kind of I can look back and learn about her, because I was little, she had all the right answers. She was in church every Sunday. After church every Sunday, she had made some sort of amazing pie, which I think is helpful in being a follower of Jesus. Pie's good. I was little. And every time we would eat, she would be there praying like she really meant it. And she had this picture above her kitchen and right above our table that if you ever go to kind of old rural Lutheran congregations, you'll always find it's of this old man next to some bread and a little bit of soup praying right before his meal. I thought it was the most beautiful picture to remind people like me who forgot to pray before they were eating. I looked back one day on this paperwork that I had found of my mom's high school papers. And she had been assigned to interview my great-grandmother, Myrna, and ask her questions about her life. In South Dakota, we do this because we're trying to learn about the history of South Dakota. You might as well ask someone who did ride a covered wagon to school what their life was like. And since my grandmother was born in the early 1900s, she was a great person to ask. She didn't pass away till she was 98, so I got to learn a lot about going to school with a bucket full of lard and a piece of bread as your school lunch and great stories like that. But one thing that struck me on this paperwork that my mother had done is it was just a list of really simple things like favorite food, rhubarb pie, which of course is the right answer. The next question, favorite book. Well, she had written Bible. I didn't know a single other person in my school or another person who would ever answer the question that way. And I wondered to myself, I wonder if this was just because of the time that she lived in, that people read the Bible and they cherished it, but there was no other books added. There was no Gone with the Wind, no Shakespeare, nothing. All the other answers, like it would be like rhubarb pie and mashed potatoes, everything had more than one answer, except for her favorite book, which of course, in my eyes, elevated her higher and higher to saint status. So I'm pretty sure that's supposed to be the right answer if someone asks. So I'm sure that my grandmother knew in the Bible when she was celebrating St. Matthew Sunday, which is what the red's all about. Tuesday is the official day of St. Matthew, of celebrating a feast. It doesn't involve food, though. Find some rhubarb pie, I say. Matthew is such a different text than some of the others, and yet if you heard the text today, really the only time he's ever mentioned is as kind of an insult towards Jesus. Did you notice that? The big text on Celebrate Matthew Day is, Jesus said, "Hey Matthew, follow me, sinner guy." Followed by a Pharisee saying, "Why are you hanging out with sinners?" And Jesus saying, "Because I hang out with sick people." Matthew. Probably the fun disciple to be, right? The one that every time you're around, people wonder why the leader is lowering himself to be around you. And instead of defending you and saying, "Nah, Matthew's really great, super smart, good fisherman, keeps people not afraid in the boat," it's like, "Yeah, of course that's who I'm going to hang out with. I'm here for ruffians like him." And yet, we celebrate Matthew. And I wonder if it's because of what Myrna knew, that, you know, Mark was this old book, the shortest. So if you're ever forced by someone to read a book of the Bible, That's a gospel text. Pick Mark because it's only 16 chapters. But people usually remember Mark, if they remember at all, because of what's not in it. The Gospel of Mark, because it's so short, doesn't have all the really cool stories. There's no manger. There's no baby Jesus at all. It starts with Jesus being in the middle of his baptism. His story starts in that moment where he's named and claimed by God with water in his head. And the whole world is torn in half. The Holy Spirit flies down, which in the ancient world also meant that this tearing in half of the world was letting the demons in too. And the question most asked of Jesus in the Gospel of Mark is this guy a demon? No, really, it's there. Go back and look. They're trying to figure out the entire story. Is Jesus a demon or not? And the answer at the end is no. He's the Son of God. But at the oldest ending in chapter 16, it's announced by the women that Jesus has risen, but no one sees it. He doesn't come back. No one pokes their holes in his hands. It's kind of this left open to faith story that makes you wonder, did it happen? Did it not? Is this guy a demon? Is he for real? Is this the Son of God? What, you know, the kind of thing that happens so quickly, you're not sure what the details are afterwards. So the Gospel of Mark, very quick, just the facts of the story. Luke is a very different story. Luke is all about kind of reveling in the way that stories of heroes are told. It starts with this really long genealogy that most people like to skip. I like it because if you go back to earlier parts of the Bible, it's not accurate. Because I was the kid in Sunday school who was like, that part doesn't make sense. But Luke goes farther than that. He goes out of his way to tell a story to show that Jesus is the most masculine man of men. The coolest hero you could ever find. Because Jesus is the firstborn son of a firstborn son of a firstborn son of a firstborn son of a firstborn son. And on for a while. All the way back to the original created person of God, showing this lineage that, of course, this person is the chosen one, possibly a king. And then Luke does the most brilliant thing ever. He takes this men of men stories and makes no men able to talk. Right? This is the story where Abraham goes to the temple and he's made mute. And Joseph doesn't believe the baby's coming, so he gets no speaking words. Mary gets this really long song. Elizabeth gets this really long attention in the chapter. And Luke turns this manly man story into a girly story. It's fantastic. And Luke becomes this gospel of a healing God who goes out of God's way to transform all of these really stable notions that are happening and turning them on their head. You know? You have to wash your hands before you eat. Turning all of these conventional notions on their head. It's the gospel. I didn't know that was coming. Gospel. John is more of a poet version of the gospel. Again, no nativity, because the story begins at the beginning of the creation of the world. In the beginning was the Word. There was breathing and breath. John is trying to take all of the stories in the Bible and use this language that weaves Jesus into every intimate moment of it. John's the kind of guy that I would have hated in Bible study because he would not have given me concrete answers that I was looking for. John would ask, you know, if you asked John a question, like, what was Jesus like? John would have said, light is really great. It gets really, really dark. And Jesus is like light that penetrates the really, really dark. You like bread? Jesus is the bread of the world. Wouldn't that be great if everyone had bread? Jesus is great. And John is like that. But the verses that we remember from it are kind of these little snippets, because if you don't take the whole poem and you just read a tiny part of it, it can sound kind of mean. So like if at football games, the people who hold up the John 3:16 signs, or at a rally where they really disagree with someone, I always wanted to like stand next to them and hold the John 3:17 sign. Like John 3:16 is, God so loved the world, he sent his only son. Which, if you're really angry, is to confront people like you. But John 3:17 is not to condemn the world, but to save the world. Right? So if you stop the poem partway through, you get, God so loved the world, he gave his only son. Not to condemn the world, but to save the world. Because God flows through everything and weaves into the most scary places we could ever imagine. And the kind of timetable of traditional storytelling doesn't matter as much to John. John doesn't have to care if Jesus goes to the supermarket or overthrows tables at the temple, because it's this untangible, that's not even a word, but if Jesus couldn't be untangled from us because the very core of his fiber was wrapped and enmeshed into every bit of us, that would be John's version of God and the world. Kind of with this also underlying notion, if you just know it, it'll be fine. Matthew. Matthew's very different too. And Matthew, I think the reason that you can celebrate it is because these other three gospels exist. So you've got the one that's like, maybe we can't figure this out, Gospel of Mark. You've got the Gospel of Luke turning everything on its head. You've got the Gospel of John reaffirming us and telling us that we can't be disconnected from God. And in the midst of these four is this Gospel of Matthew that is trying so desperately to make this story of Jesus the Jewish historical story of Jesus. So there's not the same kind of, here's the long list of everyone that Jesus was born from. This is a retelling of Moses' story. If Jesus was Moses, here's how it would have gone. Right? Remember Moses? They tried to kill him when he was a baby. So this is the story where Jesus, there's the decree sent out, kill all the babies. It's kind of following this Moses story. And then Jesus goes and flees into the desert to kind of fight with the devil. And all of these Pharisee characters always feel so much like the Pharaoh. You know, that Jesus is going to be the guy who's going to get us out of slavery, who's going to be God in the world for the exiles. And so that's kind of the place where we drop our pin into the world. Which is why kind of I get to preach this evangelism space with you, knowing that there are other gospels to comfort you, knowing that there are other saint days that are going to say God loves you and enmeshes you and could never let you go, and there are other days when no words can work, but there's that poem for you. But today, the message is, if you feel comfortable, if you know that you're saved, if you are a community where you understand kind of enough about the value of God in your life and Jesus in your life, this book is not for you. No, really, it's not for you. Jesus makes an intentional idea. I'm going to talk to you anyway. Jesus makes an intentional decision to not minister to those who are going to believe, to those who are going to tithe, to those who are going to follow the rules of the church, to those who are going to show up the next day, to those who are going to do anything that the order of worship says. An intentional effort to reach outside of the community, to continuously anytime a group came in and was enfolded into what was going on, the tax collectors and sinners didn't just get to be comfortable in Jesus' ministry. They didn't just get to be a part of what was going on. But they too, once they knew that God loved them and named them and claimed them, and that all of the people who had been saying that these rules exclude you, that those rules are less important than God's love, once they knew that, they got sent out too. They got sent out to bring back others who didn't know that yet, to find others for whom, just on the other side of whatever fake boundary was created by whoever created it, to bring back more and more and more. So this is the uncomfortable book. This is the one that says, showing up here every day, showing up here every Sunday, if what you want to be is a Gospel of Matthew follower of Jesus, you're going the wrong direction. You're coming to church. You should be going out of church and gathering up others and reminding them the message and bringing them in. Not in a if you feel like it kind of way, but that is the message. Jesus doesn't say in the Gospel of Matthew, oh, well, if you just tell them, it'll be fine, even if they don't come back. The Gospel of Matthew is a, you bring them back. If they don't come back here, we're going there. Because this Gospel of Matthew, Jesus, is one that sees sin, not in the way that you hear about it on TV, not as this uncurable people out there causing hurricanes kind of thing, but as this knot that's tied around us, that we are people tied by ropes, and that God is an unloosing God, a patient knitting God who's untangling yarn and untying those ropes that bind us, whatever they are. My grandmother would be really mad if I tell you this story. My grandmother's not here. And since it's being recorded, I also have to say, my grandmother doesn't use the internet, so if someone else hears this, I'll know who did it. When my great-grandmother Myrna died, my grandmother came to the table, and in the way that you mourn someone kind of collectively, she pulled out the photo album. She just started going through the pages and telling us about her and her life. And she got to the page of her marriage certificate, and she just began to weep. I had always thought that it was kind of this joyous thing in our family. Every single member of my family has the exact same wedding photo because they all get married in the exact same church and have their photo taken in the exact same place. So I always thought it was this beautiful story of family. But she said, look at this certificate. If you look really closely, one of the numbers was changed. But you never would have noticed if you didn't stop to look. And she said, I promised I would never tell anyone, and I promised I would never say anything. But the most shameful day of my mother's life, my great-grandmother Myrna, was her wedding day, because she found out that she was pregnant. Now remember, about 10 years ago, she was 98. Right? She got married at about 17. So remember what time that's in. And she's in rural South Dakota. So a common practice of the time, especially if you were a poor family, was you could just go to the pastor's house and get married as long as you had two witnesses. So she took her sister and her sister's boyfriend, and they went to the pastor's house, and they got married. And because there weren't the same kind of newspapers or reporting of when a marriage happened, she took the only copy of the certificate, and she changed the date to a week earlier so that it would look like she had gotten married before she had gotten pregnant. And everyone who was in that room promised to never tell. This woman who had done everything right, achingly right, her whole life had this secret thing that wretched her in the inside. And even though she went to church, where week after week she was told that God loved her and claimed her, that nothing could separate her from the love of God, because that was a secret that she never told, she couldn't be told back that she was forgiven. And so this Gospel of Matthew text gets proclaimed amongst you, so that even if we act like we are ones who belong here, whatever that inner, secret, unconfessable, deep down thing that may make us feel like we are a deep sinner, or depression, right? I can't go and bring somebody out of depression. Jesus can go into that depression. In these spaces and in these places, these unnameable things that the Gospel of Matthew needs to be proclaimed to us, those made well, those doing the right thing, those who have the ability to proclaim to others that they're welcome here, so that even if you don't believe that you're forgiven, I'm going to tell you over and over. And Jesus is going to work the dickens off to help you believe that's actually true. And my hope is that between the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of John and the Gospel of Luke and the Gospel of Mark, you'll find the gospel that speaks to you in the place where you are, that brings you to a community like this, to be pushed or to be hugged or to be left alone and think, whatever is the way that works for you, so that you can be reminded over and over again that there is no length God won't go to be with you, to be for you, to recreate you, and to declare you good. Amen. Mm-hmm.